Live from the capital of Raider Nation, Las Vegas, Nevada. It's Silver and Black Today, your daily dose of all things Las Vegas Raiders football. News, views, guests, and your phone calls are all part of the game plan. There's only one nation, and it listens here. Now your host, Scott Gulbranson.
Oh, it's a Thursday, Raider Nation. Welcome back. Silver and Black Today. Here on Raider Nation Radio, of course, always powered by our good friends, Salmon Ash Injury Attorneys, 702-820-1234, because you deserve what's best. Thanks to them and to all the folks that support us here at Raider Nation Radio and here on Silver and Black Today. Hey, everybody, this is Scott Gulbranson, your host. And today, joining me, as he does on Thursdays now, as long as he gets permission, it is my good friend and the host of the Just Pod Baby podcast, which you can subscribe to anywhere you get your podcast. That is one Mr. Evan Grote. How you doing, Evan?
I'm good. How you doing? It's almost the weekend. I'm really excited for it. We have another great weekend of football games here. Obviously, a lot of excitement in the Buffalo area. So I'm looking forward to watching these games on Sunday.
Yes, Evan joins us from near Buffalo. His wife is a lifelong Buffalo Bills fan, so at least one person in the house is happy, and I know the kiddos too because they grew up there. So it's just the way it goes. But it's going to be a great weekend, and Evan joins us as well. So we appreciate him being here and being part of the show. And again, make sure you subscribe to the Just Pod Baby podcast. All right, a rundown of what's on the show today. We're going to catch up on some NFL news. Evan and I will at the top of the show, as well as give you our winners and losers from the world of sports, because there always are winners and losers in sport. Sorry, soccer fans. We're going to talk about that today. Also, 2:30 at the bottom of the hour, Danny Heifetz from The Ringer, one of our great guests, he's coming on to talk about the NFC and AFC championships this weekend. How pumped up are you for this? I know, Raider Nation, you're disappointed. Your team is not there, but these are two really good games against with four stellar quarterbacks. So we're going to talk to Danny about these games and also get some thoughts from him, too, on the canceling of the combine and also the NFL Players Association position this week, that OTAs and minicamp might be canceled once again and be virtual. Then we will also, at 3:00, we're going to shift gears a little bit as we move towards the almost start of the NFL quote unquote off season. Sam Quinn, the NBA writer for CBSSports.com, he's going to be with us, Evan, because I don't know if you heard about this, but Las Vegas has had a sports renaissance, right? We get first the Golden Knights of the NHL. They come here, they make the Stanley Cup Finals their first year. Then we get one of the most storied franchises in the history of professional sports, your Las Vegas Raiders. And now there's really serious talk that the NBA will expand and that Las Vegas is in contention to be one of those markets for an NBA team to come here. Can you imagine, Evan, NBA, NHL, NFL, all in Las Vegas, all within 5 years of one another?
It's about time. That's all I can say. I thought it was a great market that was untapped, and I'm hoping that they continue to just keep building, and I do want to see an NBA team get out there. I think it's great. I think it's really great for the city.
Absolutely. So Sam Quinn, NBA writer for CBS Sports, will be with us at 3:00 for a little bit of basketball, a.k.a. Las Vegas local talk. Then at 3:20, Q Myers jumps on with me for his segment today. We're going to talk about something that happened in the world of Raider Nation yesterday that was disgusting. And no, it wasn't the Derek Carr vest, which I went off about yesterday. But based on that conversation, one of Raider Nation's own, one of their lovable characters and also a really fine young woman, was just ravaged and attacked by people who didn't agree with her. I didn't agree with her, but her and I had a nice little exchange of how we thought about the best situation. But then the cesspool started to pull up and some scum out there. And it was unreal. It was embarrassing for humanity, number one. And number two, the fact that many of them call themselves, and I say call themselves because I don't believe that they are, because I don't think Raider Nation acts that way. But some members of Raider Nation, including threatening her with just disgusting language. We'll talk about that with Q and talk about that situation. It's like, it's time to grow up, folks. If you can't say something to somebody, if you wouldn't say it to their face, don't say it on Twitter. And if you have to be negative and you have to be a human piece of garbage, then just go away. Anyway, we're going to talk about that at 3:20 as well. Then we'll wrap up with Vinny Bonsignore and Evan, and we'll talk about some of our picks for this weekend. So, Evan, some NFL news I wanted to touch on, though, because the coaching carousel stuff, and everybody's watching to see if Eric Bieniemy gets a job. Let's face it, that's what the storyline is, based on minority hiring and all the stuff we've been talking about it all week here on the show. But today, it looks like the Philadelphia Eagles have found their head coach. They're zeroing in on Colts offensive coordinator Nick Sirianni, who, of course, has done a pretty good job there in Indianapolis. But he also has worked with Carson Wentz in the past, just 39 years old, so another young coach. He started in 2009 under Todd Haley in the city. So it looks like another job is going to go by the wayside. No Eric Bieniemy yet, Evan. So that leaves one job. It's musical chairs. There's a bunch of guys walking around the chair, one of them Eric Bieniemy, and the last chair is in Houston.
Yeah, I think what he may be waiting on is to see it. Well, I don't know if they've offered him the job yet, obviously, but maybe one of the things that he's waiting to see is what goes on with Deshaun Watson, because obviously that's a big factor in anyone who wants to become the next head coach of that team. So you may not see that piece kind of fall until we hear about what's going to go on with Deshaun Watson. I mean, he's a great quarterback in the league, and there seems to be some unhappiness right there right now with him and that organization. So I know one thing, I wouldn't want to take that job unless Deshaun Watson's at quarterback.
Exactly. And he might be the guy. I think Eric Bieniemy would be a great fit for Watson down there, especially with the offense he runs. So we'll have to do that. Also, in some sad news, of course, Ted Thompson, the former Packers general manager, I had this going on my computer and the video popped up. I apologize for that. But Ted Thompson died at the age of 68. This is a personnel guy who had his first draft pick, Evan, right? You know who his first draft pick was, right?
I do. That was Aaron Rodgers, and it was a bit of a controversial pick back when, because there was a quarterback by the name of Brett Favre who was still on the team. So a lot of people criticized him for that pick, but I think it worked out just well for the Packers.
Yeah, it worked out good. And for Thompson, of course, he was also a linebacker, special teams player for the Houston Oilers for 10 seasons. He went to SMU, and he joined Bum Phillips' Oilers staff in 1975 and worked alongside former Raiders front office great, of course, Ron Wolf as well. So we send out the best to Ted Thompson's family. Anytime the NFL family loses somebody like that, especially a guy who had such a huge impact on the Packers team and the runs they've been able to make, including their Super Bowl victory, is huge. So our best out to that as well. So you can put Ted Thompson up there as one of those guys who really had a great impact on the game. Also, some other NFL news, as you know, players start to move around just a little bit. It usually happens a lot more after the Super Bowl, Evan, but Dwayne Haskins found a place to go. It's just a futures contract, but Haskins has signed with the Pittsburgh Steelers, and that might be a sneaky good sign with the future of Ben Roethlisberger kind of up in the air, uncertainty on whether or not he'll return or retire, or whether or not they want him to return. But Dwayne Haskins, who has made a lot of missteps, a lot of immaturity, was in a bad situation in Washington, so I'm going to give a little bit of a pass there, not for the stupid stuff he did, but definitely for the lack of development in Washington. And he might go to Pittsburgh. Wouldn't that be an amazing reclamation project if Tomlin and the Steelers can turn around Dwayne Haskins?
Yeah, I did see that. I saw that pop up on my phone today. And I think that's a good fit for him, because the Steelers have always been a pretty stable organization. They're one of the better run organizations in the league. And I'm not sure how long Big Ben plans to stick around, but that could be a person that he can learn from about, you know, how to be a great quarterback in this league. And, you know, Haskins is still a young man. You talked about the maturity. He's got to get better there. And I think, you know, he does have some talent. So hopefully they can develop that in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, it definitely is true. Okay, well, the other thing too is the story everybody in the NFL is watching with the AFC Championship game coming up this weekend is, of course, the injury to Patrick Mahomes. Patrick Mahomes took the majority of snaps in practice today, but is still in the NFL protocol for concussion. Now, it's really interesting because I'm not 100% clear on the NFL protocol when it comes to concussions, because from what we've heard from reports is that Mahomes didn't actually have a concussion. So that's number one. But number two, he is in the protocol because he didn't answer all the questions correctly. So you immediately get, this is all made to make sure that NFL players, despite the fact that they want to go in the game and they're great competitors, they also need to be watched out for and protected. So he's in that protocol. And it's just interesting to me that you're in the protocol, but you can practice. My thought would be, if you're in the protocol, you shouldn't be able to practice. And so I don't quite understand. I think the NFL with this Mahomes situation is going to have to explain itself a little bit to have people understand what it means to be in the protocol, what the protocol entails. Is there different levels of the protocol? So if I'm level one protocol, does that mean I can practice? If I'm level five, I can't. It's really confusing, Evan, but Mahomes looks like he's on track to play on Sunday.
Yeah, I would definitely expect him to play. And I agree with you on that whole protocol. I know I am a high school coach. I've coached high school basketball for a number of years at all levels, JV, varsity, modified. And one of the protocols that we have in place, that anytime a student athlete has a concussion, there are certain steps they have to pass, of course, but the last one would be return to play. And so
right.
They would have to pass, you know, be able to run for a certain amount of time or do some sort of level of moderate activity before they can move on to practice. So I do find it strange as well that he's out there practicing, yet he's still in the protocol. So yeah, it doesn't make much sense to me either.
No, it doesn't. All right. In the world of sports, there's always winners and there's always losers. Here's our winners and losers for today.
In life and sports, not everyone gets it right. The line between brilliance and ignorance is a fine one, and Scott is here to call them out. It's time for today's winners and losers.
All right, Evan, we're going to go in. We're going to get your winners and losers today. I'm going to start with the first winner. We always like to start on a positive note, right? And I know some people are making fun of it. Some people are saying, what a disaster and all this kind of stuff. But my winner for the day is actually the new head coach of the Detroit Lions, Dan Campbell. Did you see his press conference, Evan?
I didn't, but actually I was listening to the radio on my way home from work today, and I heard that he completely hit a home run, knocked it out of the park, I heard.
Well, it's funny. You hear other people out there saying that it was a complete disaster and it was a joke, but I know the people in Detroit loved it. I loved it. And let me explain to you. Detroit Lions' new head coach, Dan Campbell, in his press conference, referenced the dude. For those of you, especially, it's a big guys movie. Not saying that women don't like the movie, so don't get on me about it, but it's a guys movie, The Big Lebowski. Right, Evan?
I've heard of it, believe it or not.
Oh, you haven't seen it?
I've never seen it. No, never seen it.
Well, we got to change that. But anyway, so Big Lebowski, the dude, and a lot of people think that he looks like him. So Dan Campbell played it up. First of all, his press conference, very emotional. He said he hadn't really had a chance to talk to the team yet, so it's the first time the team was hearing from him. So he wasn't just speaking to the media, but he was also speaking to the players. And he said, listen, our team's going to take after the city that we represent, which is Detroit, which back from tough, it's resilient, all that kind of stuff, because the organization has been so historically bad that he wants to change that. And he says, we're going to change that. I know you've heard this all before. Every coach has stood up and told you the same thing, but I'm going to go out and I'm going to show you with action and tell you what I do. He used a lot of sense of humor. Remember, Evan, this is the team that hasn't made the playoffs since 1991. Now, the Raiders, of course, made it in 16 and 2002, the last time they went to the Super Bowl. So if you're a Raider fan and think you're long-suffering, imagine being a Lions fan. Not only that, it was their only playoff win in 91 since 1957. Can you imagine? 1957. So to me, I like the start. I don't know how well he'll coach. I don't know if he'll win any games in Detroit, but Dan Campbell's my winner for the day.
Yeah, you know, the only thing I will say about that is, you know, winning a press conference is one thing. I think Raider fans know that very well. John Gruden, he is the ultimate, car salesman. He's great at pitching ideas and he can get you motivated, but sometimes it's you got to put it out there and you got to perform on the field.
No doubt. Okay, Evan, who's your winner for today?
My winner for today, I'm going with the franchise NFL quarterback. Take a look at what we have matched up here in this AFC and NFC championship games this weekend. Four of the best quarterbacks this year in the business, I think. In fact, the Vegas odds, I was checking them out today for the most valuable player award. In order, you got Aaron Rodgers, who's the lead candidate right now, Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen. They are 1, 2, 3. And then Brady's not far behind. He's the seventh guy, according to the odds. So it just goes to show you that, yes, it is a team game. I understand that. You have to have a decent defense, of course, but you got to have that quarterback. It's a quarterback league. I think it always will be a quarterback league. And more times than not, you have to have that quarterback playing great or at an elite level if you want to win that big game. Of course, you could find exceptions to that rule. We've seen teams with average quarterbacks make deep runs in the playoffs, and in some cases we've seen teams with average quarterbacks win the Super Bowl, but you better have an elite defense or at least a very good defense at the least to make up for the average quarterback play.
Yeah, in fact, you saw last year the 49ers with Jimmy Garoppolo, which I would consider a very average quarterback, and he's basically looks like he's done in San Francisco even just a year and a half later. But he got there, and he had a lead in the Super Bowl. But then, of course, Patrick Mahomes, being the elite top two quarterback that he is, came out and beat him in the second half. So that's a good one. All right, my loser for today, and this one really hurts, Evan, because it's personal. You ready?
Let's hear it.
My loser for the day is Notre Dame football. Okay, I'm a big Notre Dame fan, if you guys don't know this. But Notre Dame has been put on probation by the NCAA for recruiting violations, specifically assistant coach with impermissible contact with recruits back in 2019. Because of this, they will be on a one-year probation. They'll lose visits. And they have a $5,000 fine, which, of course, the fine is nothing. Also, Brian Kelly was cited in this violation because he was on a high school campus, I'm assuming to make some other visit, and he took a picture with a prospect who recognized him, didn't know he was going to be on campus apparently, recognized him and asked him for a picture. At first, Kelly said no, and then relented and allowed the kid to take a picture. Now, here's my question. This is where the NCAA rules. Now, the thing about impermissible contacts and all that, hey, that's the rules. I would never argue that that's a bad thing. But Brian Kelly taking a picture with a quote-unquote prospect. This could be a kid who had no chance and was not being recruited by Notre Dame, but because he's a student athlete in high school, he qualifies as a prospect. And I think these are the gray areas where it's like, really? He took a picture with him. Is that really going to be that big of a deal? But anyway, so Notre Dame is my loser today because they got in trouble for not following the rules.
Yeah, some of those NCAA rules are ridiculous. I'm a big college basketball fan, and last season, the kid who was I think he was the number one pick for the Warriors this year, last name Wiseman. Of course, their head coach is Penny Hardaway, and he was a good family friend of the Wiseman family even before he was eligible to play college basketball. And he like did something where he helped the family move from like one home to the next when James Wiseman was a seventh grader, and he actually got in trouble for that and had to miss the rest of the season. So yes. I think he played in like three or four games as a freshman last year, but some of these things are just ridiculous.
Yeah, going back to the glory days of UNLV, Greg Anthony, of course, who's now a big analyst on television for the NBA, Greg Anthony was suspended for three games one time because he made a 50-cent phone call from a hotel room on a road trip. So, you know, it's like, okay, that was an improper benefit. He made a phone call for 50 cents. So some of it makes no sense. Other things you make sense over, but that. Okay, Evan, who's your loser?
I'm going with the sport of boxing. Yeah. You know, I've been a boxing fan. I wouldn't call myself a huge boxing fan, but I do like the sport. And this isn't because of anything that's really happened recently in the world of boxing, but I was thinking about it today. I see on TV and on and the internet, they're advertising for the UFC, who is set to have one of their big pay-per-view events this weekend. Conor McGregor is fighting. He's coming back. He's the main event. And really, you know, what got me thinking is UFC has really just totally become the bigger sport. You can't even put the two in the same conversation anymore as far as popularity goes. And you got to give Dana White credit. They and the UFC, they really powered through the pandemic. They kept their sport going. They put on shows all throughout the pandemic, and that was good to see. But it's really sad to see such boxing in such a low state right now. I recall growing up as a kid, seeing Tyson and Holyfield, Lennox Lewis and De La Hoya, of course, Mayweather, Pacquiao, those guys. The sport today just doesn't have the big name that it once did. And I really haven't followed it as closely in the last, let's say, 2 years. I know there's some good young fighters out there. But, you know, when you see Mike Tyson at age 54 fighting against Roy Jones Jr., who's 52, that's one of the most talked about fights of recent memory. Right. You got problems. You got problems. So boxing is the loser for me. I hope the sport can make a comeback. And, you know, both UFC and boxing are big draws in Las Vegas. So I do want to see boxing get back on its feet.
Well, Evan, as you know, I tried to be part of that comeback. When I worked at Premier Boxing Champions and we started that brand, and you know, the boxing, the data that we studied back then around boxing and how the average age of a fan was 54 years old, which is older than me even, and so that wasn't good, especially in a day and age where young consumers drive sports as they always do. And so, to me, you know, we tried to do that. We tried to tap into that, and we had some of the great young fighters out there like Errol Spence Jr. and so on, and it was good, but you never could crack it because you could never crack the UFC juggernaut. The UFC juggernaut, and by the way, I'm not a big UFC fan. Like, I've been to a couple fights, obviously. I've seen it and all that. I can't get into it. I don't know why. I try. I just don't. And I'm not against it. I don't think it's bad. I think it's a great sport. I think what they've done to market it is, of course, it's based here in Las Vegas. And you mentioned Dana White. To me, Dana White deserves all the credit in the entire world for keeping the world of sports, not just MMA and UFC, but all of sports moving through the pandemic, because he looked for solutions to continue despite all of the grim stuff that was out there. Because remember, there's a lot of people behind microphones like me who were telling you there's not going to be any NFL, there's not going to be any college football, there's not going to be any boxing, there's not going to be any basketball. That's what they were telling you. Dana White said, forget that. I'm going to find ways to get it done. To me, he's sort of like, if he'd be my sports man of the year, if you will, because he really kept things going. And I think a lot of the other leagues saw what he was doing and figured out, okay, we got to do what he's doing. Whether or not they would ever want to give him credit for it, I don't know. But I agree with you. But yeah, boxing, it's sad. I don't know that it'll ever regain. There's great fighters out there. I still have friends in the business from my time working in boxing. And I always wish them the best. And it's such a great, great sport. But whether or not it ever reaches the heights that it once was, I'm just not sure that there is the fortitude and the center thinking sort of marketing operation around it. It's so fractured and so fragmented that it sort of eats itself at times. So good stuff though, man. I like that. Good one. That's a very good one. All right. See, we're touch on everything. Of course, this is a Raiders show. It's yeah. Football.
I tried to have a Vegas theme with the boxing.
I love that.
UFC, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Very good stuff. Okay. We are up against our first break. On the other side of these wonderful commercial messages you're about to hear, we're going to be joined by Danny Heifetz from The Ringer, and we're going to talk about the AFC NFC championship game. Are you fired up? I'm fired up. These two games are going to be phenomenal. You're with Evan and Scott here on Silver and Black today on Raider Nation Radio.
From Stabler to Plunkett and Allen to Jacobs, we've got your Raiders covered on Silver and Black today. Here are your hosts, Scott Gulbranson and Q Myers.
Silver and Black today on this Thursday here on Raider Nation Radio 920 in Las Vegas. A sunny, crisp Las Vegas. Love the winter weather here. We need some rain, but hey, we'll take it. Of course, always powered by our good friends, Sam and Ash Injury Attorneys, 702-820-1234, because you deserve what's best. Big weekend ahead, the conference championship games in the NFL, AFC Chiefs and Bills, NFC the Packers and the Buccaneers. And to talk to us about that now and to analyze this game a little bit, we welcome back our good friend Danny Heifetz from The Ringer. You can follow him on Twitter, at Danny, D-A-N-N-Y underscore Heifetz, H-E-I-F-E-T-Z. Danny, thanks for being with us again here on Silver and Black today.
Thanks for having me.
All right, man. So, okay, let's dive in, right? Because we got great action. It's one of those weekends when you get to conference championship weekend and you're going to get down to determine who's in the Super Bowl. You want to see the four best teams out there, and it's hard to argue that these four teams are not those teams. They've got not only gotten there, but you look at the quarterback matchups. Let's start with the AFC first, Danny. This game is all about, to me, the kind of modern prototype NFL quarterback, mobile but can throw, really high efficient in the passing games. You have these high flying passing attacks that put up point. Is this sort of a preview on the AFC side of teams in the league and what we're going to see for years to come as far as what teams and what offenses are going to look like?
I think that's a great point. I think that's exactly where things are going. It's not an accident that the four teams that made this round are the three highest scoring teams in football. So the Packers are first, the Bills are second, the Bucks are third. And then the Chiefs might have a better offense than any of those other three teams. So that's not an accident, right? We're kind of in the era where it seems like offense might win championships. But to your point, the Bills and Chiefs, they both have, you know, it's really about quarterbacks are kind of like basketball players these days. You know, it's like the basketball players that really can lead a team to a championship. You need someone who can create a shot when the play breaks down. And that's what these mobile quarterbacks can do, right? Josh Allen, the play called works, great. But if it doesn't work, he rolls out. He just pulls something, you know, out of somewhere creative. The problem is Mahomes, even if he returns from concussion protocol, he had that foot injury, which we all kind of forgot about because he's in the concussion protocol, but he was limping pretty bad. So he's got this foot injury. We'll see how mobile he really is. I think that's a really big question going into this. It's not just, you know, whether he's able to play, but how much can he extend the plays like he usually does.
Hey, Danny, it's Evan. We're talking about the quarterbacks. Both the Bills and the Chiefs are teams that are built around those quarterbacks. But the key to the game could come down to which defense shows up and makes some plays. Based on what you've seen recently, which defense do you feel more confident in going into the weekend's game?
Oh, that's such a good question. Confident, you know, I think I lean to the Bills. It's really interesting. So, obviously, these teams played in Week 6. And that game is pretty interesting because what the Bills did was they put their safeties way back. They put their linebackers, all the defenders way back, and they're like, you know what? You are not getting big pass plays against us. You can run. And basically the Bills were betting, we think you're going to get bored of running because you guys are a gunslinging offense, and we think you got an itchy trigger finger, and you're going to throw a pick eventually because you just can't help yourself. And then the Chiefs actually stayed disciplined. They ran 45, 46 times for about 245 yards. It was the most rushing yards, most running attempts ever for an Andy Reid coach team. That includes the Eagles, too. So we're talking about 20 years of Andy Reid. They ran more against the Bills in Week 6 than any of those other 20 years of Andy Reid teams. And that's because Patrick Mahomes had all these RPOs, those run-pass options. He didn't take the bait. He kept handing the ball off. So I think that they were very disciplined about keeping that up. So I think the Bills, the question for them in this game is, do they want to go with the same plan of, do you want to just let the Chiefs run? Now, the Bills lost that game in Week 6, but the Chiefs only scored 26 points. That was actually one of the worst games for the Chiefs offense in the first 3 months of the season. So I think that the Bills can kind of go with a hybrid model of not letting the Chiefs run whatever they want. But especially if Mahomes is diminished, or, you know, Chad Henne plays, obviously he's not that great, I think the Bills defense could do pretty well.
Danny Heifetz from The Ringer has joined us. He talks about and writes about, I should say, the NFL for The Ringer. And Danny's building on that Bills defense question, because I agree with you on that Bills defense. But what do they do with the Chiefs from a passing perspective? Because if you shut down the Chiefs over the top and players like Tyreek Hill, guess what? That guy, he's pretty good. His name is Travis Kelce. He's out there and he'll kill you. So if you're the Bills and you decide to say, hey, we're going to mix it up a little, we're going to run a little bit, but we're also going to key in on the pass, what do you do? How do you beat the Chiefs with that passing game? And we know Le'Veon Bell's not a big deal in the Chiefs offense, but he is hurt and he might not go. So what do you do? Do you stop over the top? Do you key in on Kelce? Because one or the other is going to get you.
I think you pray. and I know, really, I mean, I think that the reason that this Chiefs offense is crazy is because in part, you have two guys that have to be doubled up. You know, there's a lot of football at X's and O's you can go into, and, you know, there's theories about how to stop them. But the reality is you've got the fastest guy in the league in Tyreek Hill, fastest guy in recent years, not just right now. And then you've got Travis Kelce, who basically needs to be doubled. There's probably, you know, five guys in the NFL, you can count them on one hand, that can really handle Travis Kelce on one. And so at the end of the day, they put Travis Kelce on one side. They go three receivers on the other side, including Tyreek Hill. And what are you supposed to do? It's like there's not really a plan that works for that, because even if you draw something up on a chalkboard, when you put it into practice, it's not that simple. It can't really be done. So that's why I think the Bills weren't the only team to do that extreme thing where they say, you know what, fine, run the ball as much as you want. I mean, there are other teams that tried that. I think the Broncos tried that. The Raiders messed around with it a little bit, actually, a little bit. But I think that a team is so good, and as you said, the Kelce Hill connection is so strong that teams are basically saying, fine, run as much as you want because we don't know how else to do it. And that really is an ultimate sign of respect when you've got coaches as good as Leslie Frazier, who's the Bills coordinator, and Sean McDermott, their head coach. When they're saying we don't know what to do, then I think there's really nothing you can do.
That's a great question. Talking about the coaches, we saw how important coaching was last week in that Chiefs game when Andy Reid made that critical call to go for it and throw the ball there to end the game. He has the experience in these championship games, obviously the Super Bowl title under his belt. When you look across the sidelines, this will be a first time for Sean McDermott. How much does Reid's experience in these big games help the Chiefs in a game like this?
I think it helps a lot because Andy Reid's like self-actualized at this point. I think it does help to be a made man, right? Reid's a made man at this point. I think that fourth down call last week, I think it's pretty representative. You know, he's in this second act he's had as the Chiefs head coach. There's no reservations. He's going for it. He goes for the throat. He steps on people's necks. He goes to end the game. And I like that a lot. I think that it's worth always reminding ourselves how would you have reacted if it went wrong? Because it's important to judge process instead of outcome. But Andy Reid's process is he goes for it. I'm curious to see how Sean McDermott coaches, but I'm not worried about Sean McDermott in these big games. I think he has ice in his veins. I think the bigger question is Josh Allen. Does Josh Allen – I think I'm more interested in Josh Allen's big game, late game nervousness than I am about Patrick Mahomes. And I think that is the one thing for the Bills is can Josh Allen – you know, is he going to be able to – not panic, quite frankly. And I want to make sure that I think is the real question for the Bills. I'm not so worried about McDermott.
Yeah, Danny Heifetz from the Ringer is our guest here on Raider Nation Radio. Danny, one more question on this AFC game before we switch over to the NFC. Is matchups for the Bills, you just talked about the fact that Josh Allen, you know, can he withstand the pressure? It's a big, big game, and any young player in that sense might have some jitters. And if they're at key times, that could really hurt the Bills. But when you look at that Bills offense and you look at the Chiefs defense, what matchups favor the Bills, and perhaps what matchups cause them some issues and cause Josh Allen some issues there too?
That's a great question. So I think that what causes them issues is it's going to be about how much they can confuse Josh Allen, because bless his heart, I think he's made a lot of improvements this season. But when he's had issues, it's in zone, right? The worst game he had all season was against the Chiefs in that Week 6 loss. And then the second worst game he had all season was the next week against the Titans. So what are the similarities between that Chiefs game and the Titans game? They disguised coverages against Josh Allen, and they also played zone. So in man-to-man coverage, it's kind of like recess, right? It's I got you, you got him. Josh Allen in coverage had like 25 passing touchdowns and like one pick. But against zone, he had like 11 touchdowns and like eight picks. Zone is just a harder beast to unravel. And so when defenses add the extra wrinkle of not only that, we're going to show you one thing before the snap so you think you know what's happening, and then you snap the ball, guess what? We just changed everything. It's kind of like all these defenders change positions. They're like, oh, actually the safety is the linebacker now, and the linebacker is the safety, and Tom Brady does not get confused by those things. But Josh Allen is still a relatively raw player. So when the Chiefs do those things and you think that, oh, the middle linebacker, Anthony Hitchens, is going to drop to the middle of the field, and then the ball snaps, oh, actually it's Tyrann Mathieu doing that now. That's like the best ball hawk in the NFL. Can Josh Allen identify that every play? Because this isn't like he has to drop back 30 times, right? The Bills didn't hand the ball off till after the two-minute warning last week. So he has to figure this out like 60 times in this game to get it right. And it only takes two or three mistakes to really get confused and make the wrong read or the wrong assumption for it to be a game-changing play.
Danny, I want to jump over to the NFC. That's going to be a great game as well with the Packers and the Buccaneers. Aaron Rodgers has been on a mission all year long. Looks like he will win the MVP, or at least he should. He's going to be playing in his fifth NFC title game on Sunday, but it's the first time that he'll be playing in this game at Lambeau Field. How much do you expect that to help him out and the Packers versus the Buccaneers?
Well, Rodgers is the one who wanted it, right? They lost last year. He said, we got to get one of these. So if Aaron Rodgers thinks it's a big deal, I think it's a big deal.
Yeah, it is. And Danny, when you look at that game too, you know, a lot has been made of Tom Brady. And of course, the guy just continues to go out and get it done. Not always pretty, but he gets it done, especially towards the end of the season. But it's that Buccaneers defense that I think has really kept this team in. Yes, the offense has come along late as well. But can that defense of Tampa Bay do what it has to do in the cold against Aaron Rodgers, who seems to be dealing at a level we haven't seen from him in a couple of years?
You know, I think they're going to have a hard time shutting down Rodgers. And that's funny to say, because the worst game Aaron Rodgers had all season was against the Bucs in Week 6. Ironically, both these games are rematches of Week 6, which is really weird. You know, I think it's strange. But I think that in Week 6, the Bucs just got to Aaron Rodgers. They just hit him. They kept getting it on. And, I mean, Aaron Rodgers against the Bucs last time had the third lowest passer rating of his career.
Wow.
He threw two picks in the second quarter against the Bucs. In the other 67 quarters he played this season, he had three picks. but he had two in the second quarter. But here's the thing. I don't think the Bucks are going to be able to hit him. Because the Bucks, I don't think the Packers are just blocking so much better now. Even though they lost left tackle David Bakhtiari, who's like an all-pro, they're just blocking better. The Packers, they could have let Rodgers get hit because they had all these little miscommunications. It's like the offense wasn't fully baked. Now it's like perfect. It's great. It's just, it's got itself together. It's gelled. And I just think that the Bucks are going to have much more trouble pressuring Rodgers. And if you can't pressure Rodgers, you can't stop Rodgers. That's just a fact. And I think they're going to have a harder time.
What about Tom Brady on the other side, the old man of the NFL now, and he's wheeling a deal. He wants to prove, I think, that he can win another championship without Bill Belichick at his side and giving him the plays. So what do you think Tom Brady, I mean, it seems like from what you said just now about the Bucs not being able to stop Green Bay, that Tom Brady's going to have to outscore Aaron Rodgers. Is that possible?
It's Tom Brady. Anything's possible. Absolutely. You know, it's funny because, you know, will the Packers be able to stop him? I think this is not exactly the most interesting thing, but the Bucs' right guard is like the weak link on that offensive line. And we've heard so much time about, you know, you have to do a four-man rush to stop Brady. But that's not even enough anymore because he gets the ball out so fast, the edge rushers can't get to him. You not only have to pressure with four, you got to do it up the middle. So I think that whether the Packers can really get through the right guard, I'm sorry, I forget his name, Alex something, or Alex Kappa got hurt, but this backup guard, if he's the weak link, if they can get through to Brady, that's really the key. But it's kind of an odd round because all four defenses really have to do the opposite of what they did last week, which is really strange if you think about it, but it's true. The Buccaneers beat the Saints because they didn't respect Drew Brees' arm. They were like, you can't throw over us. But now they're playing Aaron Rodgers. You have to respect his arm. And then the Bills kind of did the same thing with the Ravens. The Bills didn't respect Lamar Jackson's passing. All right, well, now they're playing the Chiefs. You have to respect the passing. You have to do the opposite, really. And then the Chiefs beat the Browns, and all the Browns want to do is run. But now the Chiefs are playing the Bills, and the Bills didn't run until after the two-minute warning. So that's the opposite game plan. And now the Packers just beat Jared Goff and the Rams. Jared Goff, again, bless his heart, not known for reading defenses. And now they got to play Tom Brady, the best reader of defenses we've ever seen. So it's just a strange outcome where every defense you saw last week is getting thrown in the trash and they need a completely new game plan. So I don't know how the Packers stop Brady if they can't really get to pressure him.
Wow, yeah, it's going to be a fascinating weekend. So what does your gut tell you about these two games? Who do you have advancing to Tampa into the Super Bowl?
You know, I think the Packers win. You know, betting against Brady feels dumb, but you know what? So is betting against Rodgers.
Yeah,
I think
exactly.
That at the end of the day, I'd rather have the team the Packers have in the scheme and the team that the Packers have around Rodgers than I would what's going on around the Bucks. I think the Bucks are getting Brady more comfortable in that system. There's more motion. There's better play action. But I think Rodgers and that whole offense are a team. I think the Bucks are still a little bit a collection of talent, a collection of players, not quite a team yet. And then in the NFC, or sorry, the AFC, you know, I think it's the Chiefs. I love the Bills, but I still can't. Even if, and assuming Mahomes plays, I still can't take Josh Allen over Mahomes until I see it happen.
Yeah, especially in a big game. Mahomes now has been there 2 years in a row. Of course, he lost the AFC Championship to Tom Brady 2 years ago, but then he goes all the way last year. And there's that experience to me in the postseason, and the fact that you've come out on top is such a huge deal, especially when the attention, and even though these stadiums won't be full, it's still a big deal, and I give him the edge as well. All right, Danny, as always, man, we appreciate you spending time with us. Enjoy the games this weekend, and we'll catch up with you soon.
Absolutely. Thank you guys so much. And you can check out TheRinger.com or The Ringer Fantasy Football Show on Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts.
There you go. We'll make sure to link that up on our Twitter handle as well. Danny Heifetz from The Ringer. We'll talk to you later. Take care, man. All right. Evan, there you go, man. So he's got the Packers and the Chiefs. I know that doesn't fit the narrative in your household in Buffalo Bills country, but I'm just fascinated. I think the point he brought up there, too, was, look, three of these four teams were the three highest scoring teams in pro football.
Yeah, that was a great point there, and I that definitely shows you. As I said, it's a quarterback league. You got to have that top-notch quarterback, and if you can get a defense that's playing middle of the road, you should be good to go. One of the other interesting things I thought that he mentioned was the fact that the game plans are going to be totally different this week. I hadn't even thought about that. That was
crazy.
Interesting. Yeah, it's completely different night and day from what they faced and prepared for last week.
Yeah, and to me, that's what's really dynamic about this because, and I agree, I think Danny did such a great job of breaking down the fact that you look at Aaron Rodgers and what the Chiefs have to do to stop him. And to your point about the defenses last week versus this week, you have to in essence have personality disorder. Whatever you did last week, you have to trash it and redo it and do the exact opposite. But then again, these quarterbacks can also hurt you running. Now, last week, of course, against Baltimore, Jackson could run as well, and we saw what happened. But nonetheless, I think that these two games are fascinating, and I really do believe. And I will say, I thought the Bucs were overrated in the preseason. I didn't see them making it all the way, but here they are, and they proved me wrong, and Tom Brady continues to do what he does. But these really are, to me, the four best teams in the NFL. And the fact that we all get to watch the games and see the best of the best there, although we'd love to see the Raiders there, is very cool. And I think that you don't always get that. Sometimes you get teams who just get on a hot streak. They might not be the best team in the league at the time, or excuse me, overall, but they just get hot, and it's interesting to see. But I do agree with him on the Packers. I just don't see the Buccaneers being able to slow them down enough to win that game. So it'll be fascinating. We're going to give you our picks later as well. Total picks, that is, soon. But what we're going to do is we're going to take a break now. When we come back, we'll take your phone calls. We haven't gotten to the phones yet. 702-365-9200 is the number. I want to hear your opinion on this game and where it's going, as well as anything else you'd like to talk, Raider Nation related, NFL related, sports related. And of course, coming up at the top of the hour, Sam Quinn from CBS Sports. We're going to talk NBA expansion and possibly a Las Vegas franchise starting up in the National Basketball Association. You're with Evan Grote, Scott Colbranson here on Silver and Black Today on Raider Nation Radio.
If you believe Tom Brady did fumble and that Franco Harris didn't catch that pass and call it the Immaculate Deception, then you found the right place. This is Silver and Black Today on Raider Nation Radio 920 AM.
It's a Thursday from the capital of Raider Nation. Inside the Mojave Desert, it is Las Vegas, Nevada, and this is Silver and Black Today on Raider Nation Radio, powered by our good friend Sam and Ash, injury attorneys. Visit them at samandashlaw.com because you deserve what's right. By the way, Evan, you know, you're a PE teacher, right, Evan? You do physical education?
Yep, PE and health. I teach both.
So PE and health. And one of the important things about being healthy is, of course, diet, right?
Absolutely. Diet and exercise. That's what you've been hearing about it for 100 years. It's true.
Yes. There's no magic pill. It's diet and exercise. Well, correct. For me, Evan, one of the things that I've been doing, and I'm so fortunate that they're part of the show here, is I have every day before the show, kind of after I've had, I eat a kind of a late breakfast and a very light lunch. But my very light lunch is a Dr. Jen's Ultimate Protein Bar, which you can buy at drjensnutrition.com. This is great stuff. It's good for you. It's good for your kids. If you have kids, it's a convenient snack, or like I use, a meal replacement any time of the day. It's certified gluten-free, all natural ingredients, no artificial sweeteners or sugar alcohols or any of that stuff that tastes terrible. It contains superfoods like spinach, kale, quinoa. It's formulated to taste great. It's got great antioxidants and high protein, as well as great fiber to keep you full. So make sure you try them out. These things taste really good. They don't taste like you're eating a piece of wood off the side of your house. No, they taste really good. Again, the chocolate banana peanut butter is unreal. The mint chocolate chip, it's better than candy, folks. I'm telling you this without the guilt, with the good nutrition that your body needs. So try Dr. Jen's Ultimate Protein Bars. If you go to drjensnutrition.com, you can get a special discount for listening to the show here, SBT10. SBT10 is the code there, plus they'll give you free shipping. If you're in the Las Vegas Valley, you can buy them at Vegas Discount Nutrition or at local Terrible Herbs convenience stores. I mean, right when you go in to gas up and you're sitting in there and you're like, oh, should I grab those Reese's peanut butter cups? Don't. I'm telling you, go get a Dr. Jen's Ultimate Protein Bar. They're members of Raider Nation. We appreciate their support here as well. You can get on here on the air with Evan and I. 702-365-9200 is the number left to hear your view of these games coming up this weekend. Huge weekend in the NFL as we get set on the eve, or at least 2 weeks before, for the Super Bowl. Also, Evan, other breaking news today in the NFL was the Minnesota Vikings offensive coordinator, of course, longtime coach Gary Kubiak, announced his retirement. And I didn't realize, you know, that Minnesota offense is so up and down. One year it's good, the next year it's not. And I realized they've had six offensive coordinators in 6 years.
Wow, I didn't realize there was so much turnover there, to be honest. And I didn't know Gary Kubiak was the OC over there in Minnesota, to be honest. I thought he retired a long time ago. So
well,
that's,
remember,
that's news to me. You know, see, my problem is I focus so much on the Raiders sometimes that I don't always know what's going on with all these other teams. So, but yeah, he's had a good career. He was a part of that, I believe, in
the Broncos.
The Broncos, yeah, that championship team there. Yep.
He was. And, of course, he went down to coach the Texans, and he had health issues and all that stuff. But 36 years as a player and a coach, and I know Raider fans, older Raider fans, will remember him from his days playing in Denver as well. It's just all these names, these retirements that are coming out with the quarterbacks, with Phillip Rivers, with Drew Brees, and there's some expectation that Ben Roethlisberger will retire, although I think he's one of those guys who might hang on a little too long. He just seems to be that way to me. Maybe I'm wrong, but we'll see what happens with them. But just this is the kind of the time of the year around the Super Bowl, Evan, where you start to see some of these guys retire. If they're older players, you start to see teams release players. Mark Ingram was released by the Baltimore Ravens, of course, and Mark Ingram cleared waivers. And that means, Evan, he could be eligible. If one of the playoff teams wanted to pick him up, he could go play there.
Wow, that's interesting. That's also something I didn't realize, that he could be picked up right now. I guess that does make a lot of sense, though. I want to change topics. You talked about retirement. Obviously, Phil Rivers retired this week. I think that's going to be a fascinating debate for Hall of Fame voters in a few years when he finally becomes eligible, whether or not they think he's going to be a Hall of Fame quarterback or not.
Yeah, and it's one of those. I was never a big Rivers fan. I mean, when I was a Charger fan back in the day, of course I liked him because he was the starting quarterback. But at the same time, there was never a big game win, right? So I think that's what you're kind of alluding to as well. But if you look at Phillip Rivers on paper, and let's face it, when you look at statistics, I mean, he's almost top five in every category. So when you look at that, and yeah, it's numbers, I get it. But it reminds me a lot, too, of some of the baseball Hall of Famers that come up every once in a while. And they're guys that put up big numbers, but baseball, with how selective they are in baseball, which is in football, they're not as selective, unless you're a Raider, is that you look like a guy in baseball like Fred McGriff. Remember Fred McGriff, the crime dog? He had amazing amounts of home runs, near 500 home runs, which has always been a hallmark. If you get near that, you're in the Hall of Fame. But he put up all those numbers, but he never had a dominant year. He never won the home run crown. He never won a batting title. He never won an RBI title. So he kind of sits in that no man's land. And for those of us who are Catholic, in that kind of area in between heaven and hell, right? So it's one of those things where when you're in purgatory, you're kind of waiting to get in, but there's no sense you for sure get in. And I think Phillip Rivers, for a lot of people, falls into that. I don't think he'll be a first ballot guy, Evan, but I think after a couple years, I bet you he gets in.
Yeah. I refer to those guys as compilers. You know, they play for a long time and they put up great numbers, but you know, at the end of the career, you're kind of like, I don't know. I think Frank Gore is going to be another one of those guys. I mean, I think he's top five in the league history in rushing, but you know, never was like an all pro. So I think sometimes it comes down to also with these Hall of Fame voters, do they value guys who put up big stats throughout a long career? Or when you look at a guy like Eli Manning, do you value championships a little bit more? Because I think when you look at the careers of an Eli Manning and a Phillip Rivers, I think I would take Phillip Rivers. If you look at the numbers, of course.
The numbers, yeah.
But Eli Manning got those championships, and he beat the Patriots doing that. And he had some vintage plays in those games and some really big moments. So it kind of depends on where the voters value, stats or big moments.
Yeah, you're no doubt about it. All right, we're going to get a call here before the top of the hour. It's our good friend Matt in Hoboken, New Jersey. Matt, you're on with Evan and Scott.
What's up, guys? Thanks for taking my call. I want to say a couple things about Rivers and then real quick about the combine and the OTAs.
Yeah.
I think Rivers has to wait. I mean, we all know he's got the numbers, but if you look at the eye test, you know, he's up there with guys like Favre, Manning, Brees, Brady in terms of numbers. But if you look at the eye test, he's not in those guys' leagues, in my opinion, in terms of winning and just overall contribution to the game. So I think he's got to wait a while. I'm not saying not get in, but let him wait. In terms of the combine, I'm a little disappointed. I think they could have figured out a way how to do it. It's not something where there's 50,000 people in the stadium. I think you could socially distance the combine pretty easily, as a matter of fact. But I think they dropped the ball on that. And in terms of the thinking about canceling the OTAs and the minicamp, us as Raider fans better pray they don't do that, because then it's a whole nother year of excuses as to why our young guys aren't ready to perform, because they missed OTAs 2 years in a row now. So we better pray we have OTAs and minicamps, because I don't want another year of excuses.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, Matt. Great call as always. And listen, on Rivers, I agree with you 100%. When you put him up, his numbers up, and the company he's in, there's a glaring omission, and that is no championships. Those other guys have consistently won championships, whether they be division championships, whether they be conference championships or Super Bowls, and he is not. So agree. And on the combine, yeah, I don't understand why they couldn't have staggered the combine, Evan, and had it over a couple weeks where you bring in groups of people so that you could distance people, you could separate people, and find a way to do it, because it's such an important thing. You're basically really giving favoritism to teams who just have a better organization, and I guess that's okay in one way. And then with OTAs, as it relates to the Raiders, no doubt, I think OTAs are so important, mostly for rookies. Listen, you don't do a lot there. You don't have any contact or any of that stuff, but getting a rookie into OTAs, getting them into the system, having get acclimated to the facilities and all that stuff is so very important.
Yeah, and I think it goes to show that this year especially, you want to focus on drafting players who are more of a sure thing. And I don't know if there is no such thing as a sure thing, but there's a lot of players in this upcoming draft. I'll throw a name out there, Gregory Rousseau from Miami, one of the edge players who I keep seeing linked to the Raiders in a lot of mock drafts. The common theme about him is that untapped potential, but will he ever meet that potential? And you know, that could take some time to groom, and without a rookie offseason OTAs and all that, you could be setting him back a little bit further. So I think they really need to zero in on guys who are more finished products this year in the draft.
No doubt. Matt from Hoboken, thank you again for listening, man. We appreciate you and appreciate the call and the knowledge as always. All right, it's time to take our top of the hour break. When we come back, we're going to be joined. We're going to switch gears a little bit. We're going to talk NBA basketball. We're going to talk NBA expansion. Could Las Vegas be the next NBA city? You're with Evan and Scott here on Silver and Black Today on Raider Nation Radio.